Utilities Advisory Committee, August 10th, 2015.
Sorry for a few minutes late. Jeff isn't here. And Nancy is excused absent today. So we begin today. Hopefully Jeff will join us soon. Let's look at the agenda and see what we're talking about first. We have a public comment session, and we have some folks who want to address the committee. You've received their emails, I think, that everybody's looked. And I don't know if any other public members wish to chime in, but we have that. Then I thought we'd begin with this pickup where we left off with SWIM last time, and then begin the comprehensive plan discussion. And that's it.
And could I suggest an additional item?
Yes, absolutely.
Is that we discuss election of the chair, and
yes, we
that
should.
That can take place at a future meeting or at this meeting, but we set
yes.
a schedule for that.
I neglected to put that on here. Thank you. We will call that
comment for the good of the order.
Yeah. Yes, I said we were going to do it last time, and then we didn't. And I was thinking, I'll just tell you, this time the Nancy wasn't going to be here, and I thought everybody ought to be here for that. So anyway, we will do that in 5 minutes to go to the order. Okay, anything else anybody want to put on the agenda? If not, we will move on. So, this is public comment. You have the opportunity to comment now, or you can wait till the very end of the meeting if you would like. Your choice. And as you and I have emailed, the committee knows nothing, I'll tell you right now, the committee knows nothing about your subject. Okay? But you're happy to make a comment, and I told you we're certainly not going to do anything tonight, but please educate us about what your concern is.
Sure. I'll just kind of step over here so everyone is
sure, please,
turn, so don't turn, their, turn their heads around. So I'm Jennifer Dolezal.
And Jennifer?
Yes.
You've heard me talk already, and we've exchanged emails. I'm Andy Merritt. We might introduce the rest of the committee so you know who you're talking to.
Hi.
Val Tullis.
He's one of our
Steve
council
Johnson.
Members. He's a liaison.
Steve Johnson.
Hi, Steve.
Jim Thrash.
Hi, Jim.
Stephen Leach.
Yes, we have.
Yeah. Okay, Jennifer.
Okay,
please.
Great. And my husband, Craig. And we live over on Hanson Road. And we are... we are trying to see.
Can we use the map?
Oh, sure.
You're here. Right?
I'm really bad at maps. Do you want to be my.
Yeah, we're south of Fletcher Bay.
We're on Little Hanson.
You're on this Hanson? Or
we're the Little Hanson that goes to the water.
That one?
Yeah, the one that comes off down on. It's hard to see here. Excuse me, gentlemen.
The
sorry.
Little Hanson that could.
Yeah, the Little Hanson that could. So we actually come off this way. These are the houses or the lots that we represent. The road comes down here to the Greenway property.
Oh, and that's where the Roberts and Schwager's are?
That's right.
Yep. And
all
Aaron's.
All the neighbors. Yeah. Yep. Liebling.
Liebling.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
That's us. That's the crowd.
I've been your road many times.
Yeah. So I guess all of this started with our understanding that Mr. Greenway has put his property up for sale and that there is an offer from a developer, Margolis, if I'm pronouncing that right. And so there has been a long due diligence process for the sale of the 37-acre parcel. And the formal address of the parcel is actually on Spring Ridge. So there's kind of an upper and a lower piece of the parcel. And why we're here tonight and what we're just really trying to get some more information so that we have an understanding of how the process works is the developers put in for a water extension for the service area, which would go up Spring Ridge. And our understanding from the pre-application, which we obtained from the planning group, is that there could be upwards of 30 new homes on the Spring Ridge part of the parcel, and potentially another 5 to 7 homes at the end of Hanson, where we are in the lower parcel. So we're just trying to understand the due diligence process that the city would go through in terms of understanding increased volume of obviously such a critical resource on the island, and our very limited understanding of some conservation efforts we've heard about, and also the comprehensive plan. So again, I'm certainly not speaking as an expert to any of those matters, but we just want to understand the process that the developer will have to go through to potentially have this extension granted for these 30 plus homes on the property.
And as I already sent you an email, UAC doesn't get involved in applications of particular developments. We may, as everybody understands, the city's doing its water, an update of its water system plan.
It's
essentially a comprehensive plan for the water system. And we haven't seen that yet. It's being done at the staff level. We will get a chance to see that. In there, presumably, will be policies on extensions, future service areas. But we haven't seen that yet. So maybe you know more about it.
Right. I talked to them about that and said that the area that they're concerned about is in a proposed service extension area that would be in the plan. So we're planning, it matches areas that we've had concerns about. So we're currently in the plan, we're planning to see how we could serve that area. But it's not an approved new service area yet until the plan is adopted and council takes final actions. But even if that doesn't happen, then there's another process they could fall back to, and they, the developer, to say we would like to apply individually for an extension. And then there's so it could be either handled, the developer's new service area could either be handled as part of an overall service area adjustment in the comprehensive water system plan, or it could be an individual request later if that doesn't happen in the plan.
Or if they don't get it as part of the city's water system, they could always drill wells.
Right, they could always do their drill the wells on their cells, and then they would have to adjust their development a little bit to do that.
When you speak of city water, does that include sanitary sewage?
No, not in that area. So they have to be big enough lots, they're on septic already, but they are close or pretty. Not immediately adjacent, but in the area of the current water system in the Fletcher Bay area.
So this is a time to hear from you, but it's not time for us to solve.
Oh, right.
No, we
sure.
are
no. just trying to understand. So do all of the decisions, the application process, Barry, it sounds like, does it actually run through City Hall? And like?
Yes.
Okay.
So like I said, the water system plan will be coming to this committee fairly shortly, in the next month or two, to consider service areas and policies and things, and that issue will be part of it because they're within the service area that we're currently planning to expand to, proposing to expand. But if the council says they don't want to do that, or if the committee doesn't recommend expanding the service area, then like I said, the applicant can come back and ask for an individual extension to be considered. And they could run through that process.
But I guess understanding was they had already done that. They've already filed for an extension. Is that not true?
They might have.
Okay.
I've met with them a couple times. They've talked to us about technically. We've given them the same story that right now you're in our proposed new service area, but it's not approved. So you can wait to see what happens with that. If it gets approved, then you're good to go. You just gotta put in your project. If you don't get approved, then you come back. So then we've talked a lot about just the technical aspects because they're up in a higher area. They're on a hill, so they've got to put in a booster station, and they have options on booster station storage, etc. So they've been working on the technical solution too. So we've talked about that.
Would the city have any concern about additional volume, the number of homes there, or has that been contemplated in the comprehensive plan in terms of future growth and expansion of the area?
Well, they have to meet the zoning, so they can only build the density that's allowed under the zoning. So they're doing that. So the water system plan that currently is under development looks at all the existing zoning and draws out the service areas we want. We're contemplating serving, and using that zoning, they that's what the plan does. It looks at, do we have enough water to serve them? Do we have a distribution system that's adequate to get the water to them? Do we have all the factors, storage, and all those things? So that's part of what the plan does, is decides whether we have the capacity to serve.
So just real quick, we have to go back and report out to the neighbors, right? So I'm going to show you. They're very particular, these neighbors.
Yeah. As you, since you all know them.
How strange.
Yeah.
Never heard that.
So if they file for the individual extension,
yes.
Which I thought this
it
is
does not go through
is,
this committee. Is that
right? I'm not sure if it does.
Likely not.
Likely not.
Likely
okay.
not. Yeah.
So if they do it through what your
the water system plan.
It would actually, the whole plan would flow through you guys.
Right.
But and that plan, we just did this last year with the sewer plan.
Okay.
So we presumably do a similar process. Yeah. We get the draft sewer, we got the draft mm-hmm. sewer plan from the staff and their consultant. We spent several meetings reading it, reviewing it. We made comments, made some suggestions. That went to the city council. The city council, here's one of our liaison, the city council in its wisdom, accepted most of it and asked the staff to do some fine-tuning, and then they finally approved it. Now, included within that was future sewer service areas, because they wanted to define those as well. Okay, so that's done. Now they're doing the water plan. Presumably, we'll do the same process. And when the plan comes to us, we're asked the same general questions you did, which is, is zoning, is this utility system you're doing built to satisfy the zoning and any logical future service areas?
And so if, again, you guys have other more important businesses, we're not going to take too much more of your time, obviously. If the service area is expanded, it doesn't mean that they don't get the water for free. They still have to go through all the expense of getting the water, the booster.
Well, they have to build that themselves.
Yeah, right. But the fact is, it's allowed at that point.
It allows them to bring it in.
Okay.
So then they can build it, and they can potentially get a payback agreement for other properties that might connect later, that kind of
Got
thing.
Got it.
I suppose you should tell your neighbors, many of whom are friends of mine,
yes.
it sounds like, is that the utility system is not supposed to hinder or aid development. It's supposed to be there based on the zoning. So if the zoning allows that, the utility is supposed to
support that.
It's not supposed to be quasi-zoning.
Right.
Well, we're the newbies on the lane, so we got the short straw. We got a couple of emails in my email. So your friends are very bright, by the way.
Well, it's good of you to focus on this.
Well,
so you know that the land trust has been talking to Greenway.
Yes, we do.
Yes. And Jennifer's been talking to the land trust.
There are lots of neighbors that are interested. They all want to be in touch with the land trust.
Everybody's been talking with Greenway over the years, yes, on a lot of things. So.
Yeah, so that's our next visit. I chatted with, I can't
Jane.
Recall her name.
Jane.
Yes. So she offered to come to a neighborhood meeting if we wanted to do that. So
yeah, we appreciate your time, honestly. Thank
yeah.
you.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
Thank
you very much.
Much. All right. So, well, item three, the swim utility at the left.
Public comment.
Is there any other public comment? Sorry. Robert's been writing so many things to us, I don't know if he's got anything else to say, but you're free as always. You're free as always.
I have been free with the pen last week, because I think it's come down to short strokes. But a couple of things you should be aware of. I think you got my separate correspondence, a copy of the Attorney General's opinion, which took a year and a half, almost 2 years, to craft. From Representative Short, and most of that doesn't apply to the city of Bainbridge Island because it's for cities of a class, one class below ours. But there are some very interesting and powerful words at the end of that Attorney General opinion related to expenditures of utility funds. And, I think you should take that under consideration, along with you all get Daniel Smith's messages, I assume, and he had some strong words related to the state auditor's accounting standards for utilities that are, if you didn't look at that, you should pay attention to that. Final thing is that when the state auditors checked out of the city, one of the things that they found is that depreciation expense for the stormwater fund was overstated by $81,827. That doesn't disturb me too much. It was a municipal.
Didn't disturb them at all.
Yeah, well, it didn't disturb them at all, and it doesn't disturb me either. It's an error that was caused. But here's why I don't understand. Ratepayers have paid for the stormwater infrastructure through capital expenditures. Now, the question is what is the depreciation that is coming, that the stormwater fund is paying into, because it's not going into a reserve fund to pay for future capital projects. It's probably going to the general fund. And the question is why are we paying a depreciation fee from the stormwater fund, and what's it going for? And it may be not related to stormwater infrastructure. It may be paying off City Hall or something, but I don't understand what the depreciation is coming from the fund for. So I know you don't want to go in the weeds on cost allocation, but I think you should look at it.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay. Into the sewer utility. So at the last meeting, we discussed the draft that of what we were edging tentatively towards a conclusion. Yeah, in the report, and then we spent a lot of time talking about street sweeping, and we asked at the end of that to Barry to help us out. Run some numbers and see if that provides any assistance. And here
there are some numbers. Not she got her. Yep, Jeff's not here. So these are pretty much in line with what we talked about last week. If you recall, there are three issues: the cost, the street sweeping costs themselves, the direct cost to do that, as well as the cost of hauling and disposing of the spoils that are the result of the street sweeping. So, the top line or the top section summarizes it all. Basically, the hauling and disposal costs of the spoils. The profile is a number. That's the contaminated. Characteristic profile of that waste, about $19,000 a year average. Current street sweeping costs about $56,000. So the total is $75,000 approximately, $523,000. And that's a 4-year average. So it goes up and down, depends on, you know, how much of a winter we had, how much sand we put on the road, all those kind of things. So the cost can vary. So last time we talked about I was guessing about labor costs, so it looks like I overestimated the labor sum. But if you look at the bottom, the current street sweeping costs show there's labor costs, there's fuel, equipment, and maintenance and repair. So the total cost was $56,000. So the cost of street sweeping, the labor, remember we talked about it, was 80-20, 80% charged to SWIM, 20% to streets, whereas the $19,000 disposal cost and hauling is 100% charged to SWIM. So, I guess if we charged it all to SWIM, it would be that, or if we charged it all to streets, or went half and half, I can tell you what that looks like as far as the difference. But the difference as far as to the utility is probably going to be, even if you went 50-50, would only be about, they're paying about $65,000 now or something out of the $75,000. So if you went 50-50, it would be, a cost shift of maybe $30,000. Maybe the way. So 50-50 would be 37-37.
So the 100%, the hauling disposal, that's 100% swim because that's the one that goes to the DPF facility, right?
Right.
And the other hauling that occurs, it doesn't show up on the sheet because...
It's the non-hazardous hauling.
It's the non-hazardous hauling.
Right.
Do you happen to know how much that is?
Well, it used to be a lot, like over 100,000, but we, since we're using the Love Green Pit, it's much less. So...
Okay.
Plus, there's no tipping fee involved. Okay. Done.
All right, and then the street sweeping that you're talking about is all street sweeping.
Right.
Total. But so in our last meeting, we said, geez, we got something different here. Should we do everything at 100%, everything at zero, everything or somewhere in the middle? Right now we're at 80-20. Value we're here, we voted. I don't know if you saw our votes. Did you hear the result? We went around the room and we ended up with two people wanting to charge it all to swim. Well, two people charging wanted all the streets, one person wanting it all to swim, one person wanting it 80-20, two people wanting it 50-50, and Steve, who went back and forth a couple times. So we have no consensus on how to deal with this. So thus we asked Barry to run the numbers and we could all cogitate a bit. And now we got two of our members aren't here, so I'm not sure we come out with this one. So to be clear, let's just be clear for a moment. The choices we had, that if we charge everything to swim, all the street swimming, you would do the, it'd be the 90, it'd be 75.
Right, but the net to swim would probably only be about $10,000 more because they're paying the bulk of it right now.
They're paying already 80%.
Yeah.
Okay.
Plus 100% of the spoils.
Right. Yeah. If we reverse that and go the completely opposite way, which is it's zero, then it's a $75,000 reduction.
Well, about 60.
Okay. Reduction to the swim utility and less.
But a hit to the general fund.
Right. Right. Okay. Or as we have 80-20, we have it to stand the status quo.
Right.
Or 50-50. Okay. I've talked enough. What do the rest of the four you want to do? We do nothing, it's 80-20.
Well,
it's 80-20. It's 80-20 for sweeping, it's 100% for
spoils.
On the other hand, 100% is going to contaminated sites, so I mean, it's going to be decontaminated. Go ahead, Emma.
Oh, I was one of the zeros, but I'm totally happy with 50-50, so that helps in any way.
All right.
I guess my thought is that some of the debris has to get swept regardless of whether it rains or not, so even if you're in the desert, you're going to have to sweep.
Right. The question is, why are the streets being swept? Are they being swept because of needs of transportation, or are they being swept for needs of stormwater? Right? Isn't that the question? Although, of course, the road system is an MS4, part of the MS4 system, so we're maintaining a stormwater system. All right. What does the rest of you three want? Steve?
Share a personal education with me, with you, before I joined the committee.
The last thing you thought about was...
Street sweeping. That's not true, because there's some nights... Four mornings when I was had the windows open, I could hear the street sweeper running. And it may have been raining or just rain or that sort of thing. My working assumption was, why in the world are they running a street sweeper to clear paper and litter, debris out of the streets, cosmetic litter? And so since coming to the meetings, I learned, well, they're probably not. They're probably there because something, it's been a long enough time, or there's been something that's sand has been put on the road, and they're collecting it to keep it out of the collection boxes. And so I induced from that is that the primary reason for running the street sweeper is usually to capture these debris before they go in the collection boxes, and only secondarily to pick up the visual debris that blows around and so forth. So for that reason, I'm satisfied because Public Works has the data to back up the rationale to keep the split. I don't know what the rationale would be to shift it entirely to the general fund or even 50-50, unless you go back and recollect the data or take someone's testimony under oath. The real reason you went out there was to do this or to do that.
So you would go with the status quo, the 80-20 on the...
Yes.
And 100% on the hauling?
Because it's all going in contaminated disposal.
Gents?
I'll stay with my position that I was in last time, Andy, which is 100% to swim. For all the reasons Steve just mentioned, same thing.
All right. Steve?
Well, I don't know if I'm waffling again. I can't remember where it was.
I'm compelled.
I mean, I think Steve makes a lot of sense. I think scale of this issue and so on is for the status quo.
Well, I'll tell you where I am. I think a primary that there's two purposes, and that particularly as bicycling increases, that street sweeping the streets is essential for safe bicycling. And nothing is worse, nothing is scarier than riding through glass on the bike lanes. And I can't tell you how many times I've wanted to call you and say, Barry, for God's sakes, there's glass on this road or that road. So I think it's equally, Steve, a street safety issue as it is a swim issue. And so, therefore, I'm a 50-50 guy. So we have, just like last time, not agreement yet. So we have two 50-50s, and we have two people aren't here, and Nancy was a 50. She was a 50-50. And
This guy was zero.
So how do we resolve this one, folks? We vote like a primary, and because we spent a couple meetings with this, it's not a lot of money. So it sounds like, Jim, you're the outlier. You and he are the outlier. You're 100% and he's at zero.
Right. I guess one way to look at the issue is what actually goes into the spoiled pit. What are we picking up?
Sand, gravel, rocks, mainly.
Some glass, some trash.
Organic materials, you know, yeah. Sticks and whatnot.
Well, here's a question then. When would we normally revisit this compelling issue? I mean, one of the things that takes the sting out of the vote is will we have the pleasure 2 years from now to revisit this issue or
probably not, unless we, I don't know, I guess the budgets come through here. I don't know. We didn't do it, we haven't been up and running. Do we run like the the only time it would come up again would be 2 years to do a biennial budget and swim. But even then, it's kind of buried. It's not like, let's discuss street sweeping again in detail. It's in labor, and it's in materials, and it's in dump fees. And unless it gets highlighted, it doesn't get discussed in detail.
So the work product that you're going to end up with that you're going to send to the council
is a report. It's a two-page report, which we've already started to circulate amongst ourselves.
And
it's going to say whatever percentage we want here.
So perhaps it's as useful or maybe even more useful to the council to know the difference of opinion and the breakdown, since you've only got a couple of these items.
Right.
And the council is going to make the ultimate decision.
Correct.
Maybe knowing what the reasoning is, people that have different views would be meaningful to the council.
What's the total volume of this one?
You know, this biking thing, Andy hit me on a soft spot with his biking finger that I bike quite a bit, and over the years I've hit pieces of metal and had flats, and
yeah.
I had a crash with the city, the story that Andy was involved with, where the city gave me some money. And so that is a big issue, keeping those, because more and more people bike. I've had friends crash because they hit stuff and were seriously injured. So so I just acknowledge that that's a significant issue that I frankly hadn't thought about.
Barry, I have a question. I presume that the schedules, the frequency of the street sweeping depends upon the street and the volume of traffic and whether it's a major artery, is that right?
We don't sweep all the side streets down.
So I would say that if the city begins sweeping the streets ostensibly because they want to take debris out of the curb for bicyclists, that means they're going to have to increase the frequency of the sweeping, because the frequency that now exists is probably unsatisfactory to bicyclists. So there is going to be an increase in the cost of sweeping.
And there might already be increased frequency, because perhaps the frequency required to keep the retaining faults clear is much lower than what they're doing. 300 cubic yards is a lot of debris.
Yards, 321 average.
I mean, we're not necessarily starting from zero, right?
Did you have any else? Did you have
one? No, but for what is at stake, I'm not going to fall on my sword.
What is the rationale for the 80-20 split to begin with?
That's a good question.
I'm not exactly sure. You know, I'm probably a mixture of what we're talking about here. Some of it's safety, some of it's swim, and so it's evolved to that over the years.
Barbara sort of agreed that we don't want to put this off to get Nancy and Jeff. We need to dispose of it tonight.
Well, here's the deal. We need to write something up. So I want to take back what the draft is I did before and bring it back next time. For next meeting, okay, and we can fill in the number then. Whether it's 80-20 or 50-50, we still sort of have a consensus that there ought to be.
I would favor us disposing of it tonight. We've had about, I don't know how much time we've spent on this issue, but we've had a couple meetings, and I think our colleagues wouldn't mind if they heard that we dispose of it. So let's just make a commitment.
I'm going to go back to 80-20. Because it seems reasonable based on everything we know about what the real activity does.
Okay, so that's 3 to 80, 20, and 2 at 50-50, right? If Nancy was here, we'd be in a tie.
Do we want to invite public comment? Yeah,
no. Do you have a thought? And then Robert wanted to say something.
Do I have a thought? No, I don't.
Robert?
I'd just like to say that this is the annual operating cost, but there's another big cost associated with street sweeping, and that's the equipment. Because the street sweeper costs about $450,000. And that's one, and they don't last forever.
That's in there.
Put a ride on the Kitsap County one. So.
Items 4 and 5 of vehicle depreciation and O&M.
Yeah, I don't think $17,000 even comes close to covering the depreciation on what the...
$211,000 over 12 years. That's what it comes out
to. Yeah, they're about 12 years, and you take $45,000, $450,000. Plus, you have to buy...
Depreciation is right there, committee. $211,000 over 12 years. It's in there.
There's a huge capital cost.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, we're at 80-20 or 50-50. Let's... Three of us are 80-20. Two of us are 50-50. We had a flip next week. If Jim's not here, right. Nancy's here. So I don't know whether we... Well, why don't we draft it up and we'll make a final decision and move on. That's it. We don't make it final until we vote on that report. So I think it's pretty clear. Maybe we play percentages even closer than that. Unless you guys want to... I don't know how you want to move this forward, but I'd say we keep on going. We're that close. Okay. All right. So that's the issue that we wanted more on regarding SWIM. Are there any other issues you all want to take up, or shall we bring the report back? I know Robert's written some emails and wants us to reconsider some things. I don't know whether you would like to do that in the context of a report that you can look at, or how you want to proceed. We can move on to the next item, agenda.
So what's going to happen now with this next week, the next time?
I was going to dust off the report that I had drafted and sent around to everybody, and I was going to ask for everybody again to give me any input, so I will do that by email tomorrow, and you all give me any input you have on the draft, and then I'll bring another draft version at the next meeting, so we can then go over. And great. Hopefully we'll get down to a final version that we've all approved. I would encourage everyone at that time to take any other look at issues, including Robert sent some suggestions. Take a look at, if you can, if one member of the public, you can do that or look back at whatever you want, and then let's make some, get a final decision so we can send it on to the committee, or excuse me, the council.
So I had a little time finally to get through this excellent full-time equivalent rack-up of the charges that go to SWIM. And in connection with the 0.88 charge by the water monitoring lady, of the full 9.8 FTE number that's going into the labor cost, which is the biggest cost of this thing. What's interesting is the allocations, we have four full-time, basically, maintenance techs. Most of the capital project coordinator, 0.62. The engineer, 0.9. And then, and all of those can be very easily related to the work scope of things that are going on. And then we have the monitoring person, the 0.88, which seems out of relationship, proper relationship to the scope of things that are going on. So my suggestion is that we come up with a better element of the 0.88 full-time equivalent charge that's appropriate for the required monitoring activities for the permit and so on, and use that to ratio instead of this 75 number that we picked out of the air, use that to ratio what we need from that support person. Instead of the 0.88, let's come up with something that makes sense. It wouldn't be too tough.
How would we do that? What do you think?
Well, the 0.88 is the labor costs are rolled into the... I think the committee was looking at more of a dollar number, like $150,000, $160,000 a year. Most of that is the 0.88, though. But I think it's the same thing we were talking about, the committee was talking about, is So 0.88 of her time is charged to the SWIM utility. The other 12%, 0.12, is charged to the water utility to do the groundwater well monitoring program. So that's that split. So the 0.88 is definitely her time that's dedicated to the water quality and flow monitoring, surface water. So now it's the question of, that the committee was talking about last time, how much of that should be charged to the SWIM utility versus the general fund, general government function. So right now it's all charged to SWIM, and it's most of the cost in the $157,000 because we have labor and benefits and everything. So it's kind of the same argument. It's just a matter of, I'm going to talk about it in the allocation of the FTE or in the allocation of the whole program.
So Jim, are you proposing that we do something different with what we have?
Yeah, in other words, this number that we're showing for that element that's going into the program, $149,000 for 16 or $169,000 for 15, includes that labor number, 0.88, and
right.
The upper, that's of the $75,000.
Right.
So, in other words, instead of just saying half of 149, seems to me like we need to really see what she does for that 0.88. And maybe it's 0.5, or maybe it's 0.33, or I don't know what it is, but that's the way to get, instead of just pulling a...
Well, so then that's where we... Yeah, I guess the way the committee looked at it, or the way she presented to the committee, was show, inform the committee on how, what you do benefits the SWIM utility, but there was never the question of, well, what you just described there, how much of an FTE, how much of your time is that benefit?
Right.
We didn't dig into that, I guess.
Well, but arguably, if she says 88% is to SWIM, 88% is what she described.
Well, 88% of her time does those things. Now, what he's talking about then is those things, though, how much of those are SWIM benefit, how much of those are general government benefit.
Right.
I don't think she was asked to break that down.
Right. And that's why the committee generally said there's some of that that benefits the general, and we've arbitrarily, although judiciously, selected 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
But that would take 12%, which would already go to the water utility, and then some other portion of the 88% would be going to the other, the general fund, not the water utility.
I'd like to ask whether, Val, do you take hypothetical questions?
I take hypothetical questions? I take hypothetical questions all my life.
All right. Committee makes a recommendation that says some portion or all that this program should be transferred to the general fund, expenditures to the general fund. What is the likelihood that the council, which will have its own agenda and own concerns, would accept a recommendation like that?
Well, I hope it would be pretty high. But I would hope that whatever recommendation comes from the UAC is accompanied by a reason, so that when the council looks at what you're recommending, they know why you're recommending it. This committee is here to give deeper thought to these issues than the council is likely to give to them when it comes to the council. And so that.
Well, I think
that's my hypothetical.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I wrote to Andy. I said it would be my final remarks on this. I've been persuaded that there are definitely benefits to this program. I think the city should support it. But I guess I'm persuaded now that because the benefits to the SWIM program, to the SWIM utility, are not precisely known and maybe unknowable, but we do know there are some benefits. There are probably some benefits to sewage, sanitary sewage utility, but more generally, there are benefits to the general public. And I think a very strong argument could be made that for a recommendation that the program be entirely funded from the general fund, accompanied by a recommendation from the UAC that endorses the program and, in fact, notes that it perhaps needs to be strengthened in the future if other issues about pollution levels and so forth around our coastal waters and our streams become more pressing. That's where I am right now, I guess.
Okay, so how do we want to proceed tonight? I'm suggesting we play around. Give me your suggestions on the draft. I'll try to bring something back the next meeting for us to get to closure on this, okay? You're not here next week, right, Jim? So
right, I'm gone.
All right, so if you can give anything to me before that.
I'll drop you an email, sure.
Okay, anything else on this one tonight? All right, we're done with this item. And let's go to item four, the comp plan. Now, what we decided at the last meeting was to, before delving into the specifics of the use, the utilities, well, just, you know, we realize there are essentially seven utilities, not three. If you talk about electricity and internet and telephone, and it was the seventh one.
Solid waste.
Solid waste. Thank you. Yet this, the utility section only covers two, and water resource section covers three. It doesn't even say anything about solid waste, and it doesn't say anything about the internet. But anyway, what we decided to do is talk more generally about what do we think about the city's involvement with utilities before getting into the detail of the specific utilities, and then we thought we'd talk about water first. So in light of that, we have an hour and 10 minutes. Mary and I talked, and I'd suggest we spend a bit of time first talking about generally, and we did a little bit of that last time when Steve went through the subject of his. There's a memo to us, and then spend the rest of time sort of going, educating ourselves on the water utilities, what they are and what they're not. But again, it's up to you all as to how we ought to proceed. If that's okay, we get started? Okay, so let's talk about just the general approach to utilities. Steve gave us his suggestion that we need to talk about, I'll call it minimal involvement of the city in utilities. What's significant in the middle ground, which Steve characterized as where we are today. Is that
charitably.
Could I ask Steve a question about,
oh, you
could. You could elaborate.
This is a dialogue, folks. He gave that out. Let's talk about it.
Steve, the positive community utility model, maybe, you know, temperamentally or philosophically disposed towards that, but I'm wondering if you, what I can understand is how something like that could be accomplished given the population of this island and its dispersal of population and the geography. When you consider distribution networks, whether it's electrical or water or sewage, sanitary sewage, when you consider concentrations of population, financing of capital costs, where you get the technical expertise to staff these utilities, and so on and so forth. I'm just wondering if you could tell me how you envision this would all happen, and what could happen here and what would be less feasible and what would be feasible.
Well, I'll speak to that a little bit, and others here may have opinions about it. The kind of positive utility model or whatever it is, this is not a brand new idea, and there's communities around who are doing a great job in these areas or maybe comprehensively providing water. To the extent we're talking a little bit about electrical authority here, in part, I want to set that aside a little bit because it's going to be a community discussion about whether we actually do that and a vote of the citizenry on the island whether the city have the authority to do that. But I think this, Steve, that there are very competent people who do these things, and of course, we hear instances in the paper where they're not so competent and they get in trouble. But overall, we have cities who, for instance, their bond ratings are very high compared to the private vendors, which is something that's a sort of the market says how to do that. So if you talk, we're talking broadband and electrical, we're talking about enterprises we're not currently involved with and require significant expertise to deploy and cost and all of that. And, but again, it's communities all over the place, including small ones, are doing that. So City of Steilacoom has 4 electric utility employees, does a great job, lower rates than we have, and they have competent, and they have, by the way, those utilities have mutual aid agreements. So Steilacoom really depends on Tacoma, a nearby utility, if they have emergencies and things like that, but these are well-defined and in my view, well-working processes. So I think whatever this third model, kind of the more comprehensive one is, I'm not suggesting there is some kind of utopia or something. It's just something where we can look around and find another community who is doing that. What we've sort of found ourselves in is a situation where the polling information shows that the public is most supportive of municipal governments on provision of parks, utilities, and what's the other category? Fire, and everybody likes the fire folks, it's most problematic when you're into permitting, streets,
police,
yeah. And so we have found ourselves in our little island here where the city is doing the things people like the least, and somebody else is doing the things that build community support, parks. We all vote for the park levies and so on. So it's a dilemma. But I think if I'm answering you, I heard you, let me know if I'm answering you. I believe, for instance, if you're going to get in the electric business, in some ways it's not rocket science. 62 communities have done it. Some of them are really small. Polling information there says the public community supports it. Reliability is higher than we have here. Rates are lower. And you have local control. People can, who don't like something that's going on every 2 weeks or every week or something, you can go to a meeting to address it. And if we went down that way, one of the first things you might do is hire a competent electric utility manager. So I believe this city has very competent people working for it. Not everybody agrees with that, but that's my strongly held view. And that they'd be capable of either on contract or permanently hiring people to do the things we might do going forward. But not a utopia, something that other communities are doing. And for this kind of community, I think that model fits.
Well, the distribution networks that Xfinity and or CenturyLink, PSE have, what happens to the ownership of those distribution networks? Does the city find the financing to buy that, or do the companies continue to use the own the distribution.
Well, the most recent example on the electric side is Jefferson PUD. So they decided in 2008, when the company was selling to foreign owners, one of the motivations there, and it was a business guy, retired there, said, hey, let's buy this ourselves. It's going to own by a company, Macquarie Bank in Sydney, Australia. Let's approach PSE and let's get the legal authority to do that. First the city of Port Townsend, and then they decided to do it through PUD. They bought out all of PSE's facilities. And they did that under the threat of the power of eminent domain. And you know, in a way, PSE has a franchise here. But my understanding is they don't have a sacred right for to ever serve this community. Now, in some cases, some places in the country, there's been so-called overbuild model. Maybe the system's worn out, the company wants too much for it. They said, you know, we'll build an entirely brand new system for less than the cost of purchasers. That I don't think would be the case here. For one thing, I think the system's in pretty good shape. With respect to internet, the dilemma we face that communities have found that can do that really well is when you have electric utility, you have the right away the poles, the people who know how to string wire and everything, and you get an economic benefit from the electric utility from the smart grid stuff. So you pay for part of the broadband system because you can then do things like, for example, control hot water heaters. There's a huge electrical load in a surge of need of power to be able to cut that out for a period of time can be a big benefit. So I think there's a bigger dilemma on municipal broadband absent owning the electric utility. It's just a bigger hurdle for the city. For one thing, you have to negotiate pole attachments with PSE. Kitsap PUD is doing that now. It's very difficult. The company wants a lot of money per pole to attach. And the other thing is, I'll cut this off then. When you own your own utility, there's rules about the proximity of these other utilities that are attached to the pole. And the company says, and the rules of the state, electrical folks and so on, is you have to be far away from the electrical facilities for obvious reasons, safety and so on. But when you own the utility and you're a public power, you don't own them, then those rules are more permissive because the assumption is you know what you're doing, the same people are on the poles, and so it's cheaper and easier. So I would say probably in terms of going ahead with municipal broadband on the island, it's a much bigger challenge to do that if you don't own the electric utility. Not impossible. Sandy, Oregon, just done it and spent some articles about that, and it's looked like it's going to work. But so sorry I've taken so much time.
How do they finance the purchases? How do they finance capital improvements? Is it bonds?
It's revenue bonds. So you issue, you know, there's a price. It's a lot of money, but the market likes those bonds because they, and it's kind of a vote of confidence in a way, but usually you get a very good rate because it's you pledge the revenues from the electric utility. So those revenues are pledged, and, you know, the city has a good bond rating, that's the way it's, like other utility activities, that's the way it's funded. Except this would be, of course, a pretty large number.
So I wrote down all the utilities that we're talking about. The question in my mind is, if you're talking generally, what should our policy and philosophy be towards operations utilities? And to me, it depends on the implementation depends on the utility. You started with the questions of structurally, organizationally, how could you operate? How could the city operate? Who should operate? It doesn't have to be the city. Organizationally, how would you operate? And the second question is economically, what's best? And the third, to my mind, is what's what reflects the community value. And to me, that argues towards local control, but it depends on the other two. If it's way more expensive to do it locally, then the economics tips the scale. But to me, you have to consider all of those. And then, so to me, if with that in my mind, I kind of go down each of these utilities and say, well, organizationally, can you do, how do you, what's the best way to operate it? Economically, what's the best? And then sort of community values, what's the best? And then sort of go down each of these and figure out which you, what you do. That's kind of my thing. Now, we're going to start with water, but you can see each of these. I mean, this today, we do things differently, as you know. Solid Waste is a private company on a contract with the city. The internet we don't have, yes. We have multiple private companies, right?
Well, we have a franchise with Comcast.
All right.
That's being renegotiated right now.
Okay, so there's a contract right there. And you have a franchise with Bainbridge.
I don't think we do.
Disposal, don't you?
I think they have a WTC franchise. WUTC.
Bainbridge Utility.
Yeah. It's a WUT. It's like a state franchise, I believe.
Are regulated. They're like private water companies. They're regulated in their rates by the WTC.
But they also have a service area.
It's not a franchise.
It's not a franchise agreement per se.
If there isn't one currently, that's not to say there shouldn't be one.
Well,
I would call it a private entity that's doing that. Okay.
Yeah,
it is. Home things too, that's a private entity. Electricity is a private entity. Stormwater is the city. Sewer is the city and Sewer District 7.
And septic, which is there isn't.
In water, we have the city, we have the PUD, those are governments, which we'll talk about in a minute. Mm-hmm. We have privates, and we have private for-profit, and then you have private not-for-profit. And so that's what we're doing today. And part of the philosophy, if you're talking here, is organizationally, to my mind, organizationally, structurally, what's the best way to do it? And that, in my mind, reflects where we are today, history, and other ways to do things differently. And then economics and local and the community values issue.
Cities that have gone down this path, do they
this path to what, Stephen?
Towards local control, take over by the municipality. Do they embed management of and operations of those utilities within the city, or do they create utility districts that may have maybe elected but run the utilities?
Well, I think you're talking there about the electric utility and I'll answer your question, but I think to a certain extent, when I wrote the memo, I thought, you know, maybe because we're not yet fully engaged on that discussion, that we'd sort of set aside the electric utility, because I don't want to lose what's going to happen with water and so on, where this middle or muddling through model of ours is, I think, going to fraught with problems coming down the road. The PUD buying out water systems that they're talking to now, Kitsap, PUD, and so on, and that we think through how we're going to deal with this. Let's say we never got into the electric business. We didn't.
What are the problems you're envisioning?
Pardon?
What are the problems you're envisioning?
You know, I think we'll run into each other more and more as we have, let's say the KPUD takes over additional water systems on the island. Well, actually, I think might be consistently with a positive utility model, maybe we just we just have a closer working relationship with them in which we say, fine, we think you can do this job. Why don't we work together to have you do it? You know, so. But I think we're already running into unhappiness, and so the electric utility side of it is a big question. But we'll have upcoming forums where you'll hear from, like we had that May 9th, where you'll hear from utility managers and some from other places. The simplest view is it's just another utility. In this case, it has maybe a person running the utility who is higher paid and so on because of the, you know, a $17 million a year operation and with some complexity. But it's just another utility within the city.
Steve, when we're going to talk about water in a few minutes, I want to give you an outline of the legal structures for operating water systems because I work with that all the time. That will be part of answering your question. Because Steve's right in the part that each of these utilities have different regulatory schemes, either both statutorily, in some cases federally, and you got to play with each in state, certainly.
And the economics vary.
Dramatically. For example, stormwater utilities in the city, that's the only entity that's allowed a stormwater utility. So, you know, we can't. Yeah.
Privatize that.
You can contract it out. Yeah.
The operation of it. Yeah.
Yes. But you can't have a water district run the stormwater utility, for example. Okay. But others, you know, each of them have their own schemes, which we need to talk about. Do you guys want to chime in more, or should we just start going into the water utility? I'm mindful of the time.
The worry I have is providing enough management expertise to really get it right in each one of these. And the other driver, in my opinion, is how much do we depend on outside the island elements of each of these utilities? There's a vast infrastructure out there that we either have to tap into or not, whereas, for example, sewer and water, we do not. So there's a kind of a geographical dimension and a managerial talent dimension to life. Not to mention just, you know, how you interact with this stuff throughout the whole width and breadth of the island.
Okay.
I want to know if the city were to take over all the utilities, would Barry get the title of utilities are?
Maybe that'd be vaguely public utilities, like Seattle Public Utilities.
Right. Seattle Public Utilities, Tacoma Public Utilities, they have
separate departments,
utility departments.
And well, to piggyback on what Jim's concerns were, there were, what we didn't mention were all the back office functions that go with utility, the billing, procurement, so on and so forth. That's unseen, but it's critical to the operation of a successful utility.
But that stuff is going on. I mean, somebody's doing it all the time.
Right? No matter who owns it.
Utilities are running, and somebody is doing it. And so, this isn't rocket science. It seems to me that the management issues, I mean, you can debate, and lots of people would debate, will debate, this gets to be a public discussion, Bainbridge Island's history in managing its water utility and its sewer utility, and there'll be strong opinions as to whether or not, why should you entrust the city to do this because they done X in the past. But the fact is that any of this can be well managed. The question is whether there's some good, in my mind, the question is whether there's some good policy reason to go to the trouble to have the city do it. And I have some views, but committee. I think the management thing, if you decide that there's a good, strong policy reason, then you look at the economics and you look at the management hurdles you have to, the hoops you have to jump through to do it right. I recognize that there are already people doing it. It's operating, and so...
But Val, managing as a private company and managing it as a public utility is a completely different proposition, because if it all comes to the city to manage, then suddenly you have all these advisory committees in which we're all having hearings ruminating over whether 0.5 FTE of this should be assigned to that. It opens it up. You want it opened up to public scrutiny and inquiry, but it makes it a lot more complicated.
Well, it depends on, again, it depends on how you do it. Recognize that right now, more than half of the island outside the city utility is being run by a public utility. So they've got open meetings and public process, and you know they operate however they operate. This committee isn't mandated by law, but it's, at least in the view of the current council, something that they want to have to advise them as they go along. I don't know that 0.5 FTEs is 0.5 FTEs, whether you're dealing with the whole island or a little piece of the island. The fear, the concern about taking on a big project, I think, is a legitimate concern. That is, a central part of the discussion that has to take place. But I think the management issues kind of are secondary to the policy issue of whether or not it's, if you could do it well, would it be in the best interest of the island to do it?
I think that it might be really useful to try. Let's say tomorrow somehow it got set aside, and we, for in the foreseeable future, we weren't going to get into electric business. That debate, communities decided we don't want to talk about that. I still think we face these issues about what the city's philosophical approach is. To how we're going to manage these other important utilities and how we're going to kind of regulate them, and the franchises, and so on, and the model that's the most assertive, in my view, might fit with my understanding of what this community is about. I mean, the per capita educational level in this community is phenomenal. I don't know how it compares to any other community in the state, but it's high. And their interest in the environment and all those kind of things. So it might be useful to kind of set aside the electric thing, which is going to get debated, and think just about all these other utilities and their general approach. Right now, I think it's the muddling through model. The middle model is the muddling through model. And it's going to cause us increasing difficulty over time. And the city will wear, let's say the city has less potent in terms of influencing that, less control, they'll still wear a lot of bad feelings about it. Just because KPUD is doing it, then we run into issues that I've already heard discussed about interconnection of water systems and things like that. So anyway, maybe we should leave this at electrical.
Why don't we shift over and talk about the water system for a while? Water systems, as you get into the details, it helps flesh out the general. Right? That's okay. So maybe what we ought to do is just talk about what we have on the island today, and then what I want to do is tell everybody about what the organizational alternatives are. So Barry, why don't you?
Let me start over here. But this has kind of the division of the island in general. So, and this is from this is the Group 8 water system. So this is supposed to systems with over 15 connections. There's a lot of Group B water systems, and I don't have a map to show. There's anything with more than two or three up to 15 is Group B. list. But anyway, in general, well, there's a countywide coordinated water system plan that we all went through this process several years ago, where we divided, the whole county was divided up by providers. So the city of Bainbridge got the center of the island. North Bainbridge Water, which is now PUD, bought that out. They got that part of the island. This Agate area up here, Agate Pass area, is actually city service area, although we have no service up there. It's claimed as part of our future service area, but we have no infrastructure. And then, of course, the topic of great interest recently is this whole South Island area. So it used to be South Island Water and Island Utilities. Now, so those are the two big pieces there. Now that's all KPUD. And then the city has this small sliver of service just on Rockaway Beach. So the city current service area is, of course, Winslow, then we got distribution down New Brooklyn, so there's been some connections made along New Brooklyn, and then we have a service area in Fletcher Bay. But with all this wide area is also areas that are future city claimed areas. So what happens in those is that if there's a new utility to be formed, they're supposed to contact us first, and we would have a duty to serve them in a timely manner. So if they're up here, we probably wouldn't be able to do it. If they're close by, we might be able to do it. But that's the extent of it. If we say we can't serve you in a timely manner, the developers still have the right to have water so that they can proceed with developing their own utility, whatever that be, maybe a homeowners association or whatever, drill their own well, put in their whole system, and become a standalone. So that's what that is. Then we have some smaller ones. You know, they're still Class A's, Emerald Heights, Meadowmere here in the middle, and Phelps, and Port Madison. And our understanding is that KPUD may be talking to several or all of those as we speak about buying them out. Because they, you can see they are adjacent, they're surrounding, so they, I think, are aggressively pursuing potentially, if the interest is there, connecting them up. So then sewer is, of course, much more limited. The city system is really just Winslow again. Mirrors a lot of the water area, of course, but it doesn't extend over to New Brooklyn or anywhere else. It's just down Winslow, and there's a lot of missing, not much on the beach out here either. And then South Island, we have Sewer District 7, which is really the old Fort Ward. And they have a plant down there on Fort Ward Road. And then the city, since they had capacity in their treatment plant, the city formed a local improvement district and constructed sewer for, of course, the Linwood Center, Pleasant Beach, Point White area, Emerald Heights neighborhood, Blakely School. There's a potential to provide sewer to Blakely Mill Park, or whatever it's called there. That's a parks district facility, but there really is no service there. The line goes right by there. And then there's service to Rockaway Beach. So we have Rockaway Beach, really, and the Linwood area, and a couple little pieces. But all that ends up going down to a treatment plant that's owned by the sewer district. So that's it. And then here, this is just more of a blow-up, because I know that folks are coming to the meeting today. So this shows kind of where we currently serve. The current water system plan is looking at potentially bumping out this area down Fletcher Bay down to the park, in which case this Greenway property would be in the service area. Currently, they're about three properties away from the service area. The service area goes to this existing new development, I forget the name of it, but it goes up the hill here.
Chafing one?
Yeah, I forget the name of that. Anyway, so they would have, Greenway would have to extend it down and build out their properties, and then, of course, people in between here who could use that line would be potential paybacks. And then we've, you know, the water system plan is suggesting policies that say, if you're on, you know, New Brooklyn, if you're adjacent to the line, you know, we should be able to easily connect those folks. In the past, there's been a lot of, certainly with the sewer, there's been a lot of interest in restricting that from various public voices, because sewer is seen as more of a growth driver than water. Water should be available everywhere, but sewer drives density in people's minds. So there's been obviously a great interest in restricting sewer service, and I think some of that spills over into water policy too, frankly, because it's a pretty burdensome process to right now to try to just, you know, say this one property here has a problem with their well, they'd like to connect the lines right in front of their house. Oh, well, you're not in the service here, we're going to go to council, we've got to do this in public process. We becomes kind of burdensome.
For where is the sewage treatment plant?
The sewage treatment plant is down here near Holly Park on.
Except from the ferry dock, you go toward Wing Point.
It's toward Wing Point off of Holly, between Holly and Irene, or down in there.
And the
sewer treatment.
That's right in the middle of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
You haven't seen that.
Sewer treatment, sewer district 7's plant is off Fort Worth Hill.
In the gulch.
Down in the kind of gulch. But then the plant is here near in the Wing Point neighborhood, kind of, then the line goes down the beach and then across Wing Point and outfall is really in the sound.
And your outfall is out here, right?
Yep.
Does the topography of the island and the dispersal of the population present engineering issues or challenges for extension of the water system or the sanitary sewage system?
Yes. I mean, you need density to make it economically feasible, plus the distance. Plus, as I mentioned, the treatment plant itself is in a very, very tight spot. It really can't expand. So there's houses right on the border all the way around it and the wetland on one side. So it really can't get any bigger in this location. So we have fixed capacity in that treatment plant. And then, so the thing that the sewer plant looked at was these pockets of new density, potentially in the island center and in Rolling Bay. What could those areas do as far as being sewered? And they looked at, well, what if we ran a line all the way down? If we ran a line over here, and or we just put in a small standalone plant. So there's new technology that's we can have standalone plants, or even I think at it was out in the center, just a large septic system was actually the most economical thing.
So topography is a non-issue.
Well, I don't know. I mean, topography can be overcome with pump stations. It just makes it more expensive. But there's not going to be a lot of gravity. Everything's going to have to be pumped. But it depends on where the plant is. So most everything is already pumped to the plant. There's gravity's. Everything else is going to be a pump station anyway.
And they don't have septic failure issues on that stretch of beach?
Along here?
Yeah.
Such a high bank.
I don't know. I
this is I think.
Well, because we sewered that whole prison.
This is where
it was off.
There was concerns down here.
Yeah.
And you may have it here.
Yeah.
Eventually.
So anyway, there's treatment plant capacity and growth problems there.
So let's go back to water for a minute. Let me. Explain, I guess, the different choices of water utility management or organizations, because it's actually a bit confusing.
Just to be clear, you can operate a water utility. A city can operate a water utility under RCW 35. County can under 36, and I point to these, give you a statute number, because you actually literally have to go and see them, and that tells you the power they have. And these are general purpose governments, which we all know have the difficulties which we talked about with allocating employees between the various general fund obligations and the utilities. The utilities are operated by these, but they are standalone accounts, and they have to keep the money separate. Okay? So, and that's, people forget that all the time or ignore that. Doesn't mean there isn't some opportunity by the general purpose government during the allocation process to favor one or another, and we've already talked about that before. But the point of it is that the utilities themselves are called enterprise funds, and they're to be kept totally separate from the general. So you can operate those. And then we have water and sewer districts. And those are under RCW 57. And those are, this is the gen, they begin to have these special purpose districts. They have one function, and it's to operate a water or a sewer utility or both. These are all governments now, just to be clear. These are elected, they're run by the city council or the county council or the county commissioner. In this case, the board of commissioners of the water or sewer district or both. They used to be separate statutes. She was an elected official for Sewer District 7. They have, typically have three commissioners that are elected. They run, they're appointed to the city council. Some districts, depending on size, have five commissioners. We on this island have Sewer District 7, which is our RCW 57 district. There's also the public utility district is an RCW 54 government. It operates under its statutory power to operate a water system, electrical system. It does not have the power to operate a sewer system. Unless it now has the authority at a local level to do it.
PUDs have the authority to be in the sewer business. The KPUD, is that what you're thinking about, Andy? What they do is an authority that PUDs have, as well as limited telecommunications.
But I don't think they can operate sewer unless they're a vote of the people.
That's right, and what I heard from the manager of KPUD is that they were going to seek that at the November election.
Right. This is it in the state, as in for government stuff. Actually, it's not true. Irrigation districts can do that. But these are all governments, and I emphasize the difference here. They're all operating, they have to operate through the public bidding statutes, the Open Meetings Act. They are governments. They can set the rates. The Board of Commissioners, the City Council members set the rates. They set the maintenance policies. They do all of those things. And here, these governments are supposed to, because they are special purposes, then essentially all of their costs are attributable to that function. We don't run into the allocation issue quite as much as you do when you're allocating to a utility general fund.
And all of the authorities have the authority to issue bonds.
Yes. Now, a big key to this is even though they are these governments operated, they don't just do it on their own. They have to meet the Department of Ecology and the Department of Health standards for operating the utility. So the Department of Ecology runs the water resource, and the Department of Health runs the system. So any of these, and we'll get into the privates in a minute, they want to build a pump station or they want to run a water or sewer line, and they have to meet the State Department of Health standards. They just can't do whatever they please. And so what we're talking about with the water plan and the sewer plan the city's doing, that has to meet Department of Health standards. And the districts all have to do the same thing. So the regulatory morass sometimes becomes a problem. One thing that's important to note is there's an unusual statute which allows us a city to assume a water or sewer district by the vote of the city council and take it over and the district disappears. That has happened in the state. It's a very contentious issue when it does. But in fact, when I was on the new city council in the 1990s, when we were sort of getting organized, somebody said, well, what about Sewer District 7? The city can take over the sewers. Because when you logically think about sewer service, you say, why do we have two sewer utilities operating now? Why don't they just combine? And the city could just literally, by vote of the city council, next week. It's nice that there's a process to it. could take over this district, it would disappear. So when I was in city council, we didn't want to get into that. We were busy organizing ourselves, the city as it was. We didn't do that. And the city sewer district hadn't built the sewer plant at the time, and so why take over something and have to build a sewer plant? Now they've got a treatment plant. But you still face the issue of why are there two utilities operating within just a few miles of each other? But anyway, the point I'm getting to is the city has that power, the county does not. The city does not have the power to take over a PUD. And the statute just passed the legislature this last year, which gave the districts the power to have a referendum if a city council chooses to take over the district. So a vote could be needed. So these are all the public ones. Now we have the private ones, okay? And we have the private, as I say, for profit, and the private not-for-profit. Okay, and the non-profits, talk about that for a minute. The classic is a local homeowner association of 5 houses or 15 houses or 30 houses or whatever. And very common, we have a whole bunch of them. A lot of these areas, Barry gave you the list of the big ones, there's probably 50 different ones.
Yeah, at least a lot. Smaller.
But anything from 2 to 14 is a Class B water system. Class A is up, from 15 up. And what's a little strange is, if it's a profit system greater than 100 customers, then their rates are regulated by the Washington Utilities and Transportation Commission. There's a whole process they have to go through. Right? So that's the first time I can get involved with South Bainbridge Water Company, because they propose a rate increase and they have to get it to see. If it's less than 100, there's no approval of what the rates are. And the reason they have this is because it's a
monopoly.
It's a monopoly, exactly. And so the I remember we had, this was 20 years ago, when I was living down here, South Bainbridge Water Company used to just be this area, it's over time expanding. The WUTC, they put in a rate increase, and a bunch of people there, including me, objected. So the WUTC came to Bainbridge Island. We had a hearing in the fire station on Bainbridge Island on their rate increase. And I was sort of rolling our eyes about here they're coming to have a hearing about 125 people in the water system. And at the same time, they were considering Puget Power's rate increase, which of course is millions of dollars. And the reason I mention this is because we have these other, we still have this private system. Mineral Water is still a private company.
Bill Is Point. That a wellhead somewhere in that area?
Yeah, there
or is.
Is
it from somewhere
and
else?
That used to be, what's the guy's name that he died just a few years ago who ran that? Junko. Anyway. Now, you don't have Bill Point here. Bill Point, where Jeff lives, and that's a community association, so that's a nonprofit. Now, they hire Washington Water Power, which is a private company, to manage it for them. They could hire somebody else. They could hire the city, for that matter. There are a variety of little company-run systems in here, just so everybody's aware of what we're dealing with. Okay. So when we talk about what's the future, those are the alternatives that we have for just running a water system. And Steve's point about it's kind of a morass and we're muddling along, and that is true. We're muddling along. Meadowmere Water is, you know, that's a private company. Island Water, it was a private company. That one, you know, when that was expanded over time, Fort Blakely Mill Company sort of built that and expanded that. So if we sit here and look about what should our policy be towards this, this is a non-profit that's been around for long time. I don't know if you guys know any of the people in there, but they own the beach along here, and you drive along Fort Madison, all that wonderful land, they own that one. I don't know who owns Phelps. I assume it's a private. So,
believe, and that's the
story. Yeah, it's a really interesting tutorial about this, but is there what's the trend? So I mean, outside of my experience here, I would hear about failing water system, people unhappy, and so they'd look to a city or a government or something to take it over. And in some cases, even by eminent domain, because the owners didn't want to sell, but they're providing miles and you're unhelpful. The health department got involved. Said, look, these people are not doing a good job. So on Bainbridge, as you look going ahead, all these small water systems and so on, where are we headed?
Well, I'll tell you where we're headed. And I'll digress for 20 seconds. When I first got moved here, I lived down here and we ran out of water. And South Bainbridge Water Company was there. There were 85 customers on the system at the time. And I started calling around and trying to find out what the deal was. And that was right after they passed the Water System Coordination Act in 1977, the state legislature. And the point I'm getting to is that they began to create a process to encourage, every way possible, the state did, consolidation of water systems, particularly the local ones. And I've now worked in the water industry for 30-some years. And the answer is consolidation is occurring everywhere. And it's a slow process. Now, South Bainbridge Water used to be here, but they've slowly taken over other systems. It's very common. That's what's happening everywhere. Okay? Because the little systems just don't have the professionalism to run systems, particularly with the increasing regulatory requirements from the Federal Environmental Protection Agency down through the State Department. So trend number one is, and it's been going on for 30 years, is consolidation. Trend number two is battle is perhaps too strong a word, but in some cases it's not. And it's the battle between the general purpose governments, the cities, and the special purpose governments, primarily water and sewer districts, but also the PUDs. And we saw it here. Blossoms didn't want to sell their system to the city because they didn't want to get lost in the city general government. They would rather give them a special purpose government. On the other hand, special purpose governments have deficiencies as well. That is, they don't have typically as much public knowledge and involvement. You have a splintering organization I mentioned before. City of Lake Forest Park has four water systems operating within it. Four governmental water systems operating within it. City of Bothell has five different water systems operating within it. And the splintering of control and management is sort of mind-boggling. So you have this tug of war between what's the best way to operate. And there's no right or wrong in one sense, because both can function well. And we have it here now. We have a publicly owned water system here. We now have the PUD with publicly owned water system. We have a publicly owned sewer system. Two different publicly owned sewer systems. Is that the best way to manage? Probably not. Economies of scale, everybody knows, in this world are driven by volume of customers, volume of supply and resource. So the trend is this kind of problem in the suburban areas where you have the cities and the districts in clash.
Well, I suppose that could be the trend, but wouldn't the comprehensive plan want to address whether you allow that to occur organically, or you have policies which are directed to accelerate that process?
the place to do it's comp plan. The city of Bellevue's comprehensive plan has for decades that they are going to run every single utility within its city, other city. So that's where you address it. And in fact, if a city actually takes over a portion of the water district, there's an opportunity, there's a requirement in some places an opportunity, that the county boundary review board review that. The Kitsap County Boundary Review Board might very well review any of these, any actions here. And one of the first things we did was we look at the comprehensive plans of both agencies to see what they provide. So, yes, the answer, in my view, the answer to that. Having just gone through a boundary review board hearing last year in King County, that's one of the first things we look at. So, thus in my legal sense.
So, if the city decided that its policy was to or reaffirm the policy that it's got, yes, to acquire water systems on the island, what are its options about how to go about doing that?
Well, let's assume that it has that policy. That you can have it can be very detailed, which is the city of Shorelines. I've seen it. The comprehensive plan says it will take over Ronald Wastewater District in 2017. Okay, it can be that specific, or it can be very general. The city's policy is to negotiate and acquire water. Okay, so assuming that it's not a hostile takeover, then the city.
Well, is there some hostile takeover option?
Well, the city can take over Sewer District 7 in a, quote, hostile way.
And that wouldn't necessarily be hostile. I mean, that's just, well, that's permitted in the,
right, there's a state law that allows that. The Board of Commissioners of Sewer District 7 could agree that it makes sense, let's merge. I mean, they could do that.
Hostile takeover might be the wrong term.
Yes, it is. Yes. The question is hostile in the sense that the commissioners would say no, they don't want to, and then but most, by the way, most mergers between cities and districts are by agreement between the elected officials and the city. Now, to answer one big thing, to me, the driver of all of these should be, in my view, and it goes to your topography thing, engineering, which is driven by topography and dollars. What's the most economical way to operate the utility? And many of the systems in other areas are really basin water based driven. But back to your point, is the city could simply negotiate a purchase, go to them and say, hey, we'd like to buy your system, and that's, you know, two parties of any negotiation. The city probably, I've not seen this, but probably could acquire by eminent domain the systems.
And the city could acquire by eminent domain, and negotiation or whatever, all except the PUD. It could not acquire the PUD facilities.
By eminent domain?
Absent agreement by.
You know what? I don't know that, Steve. I haven't researched that. There are, you have to double check to see whether you could do that or not. I think it's probably the case.
It's a government condemning.
But you can condemn Kitsap County Sewer District.
The eminent domain statute related to cities says specifically that it can take over. It doesn't limit it to PUDs, and it does include property of the federal and state government.
And that's why my answer to this is, somebody needs to do some good legal research on this, because there's some sort of twist to the statutes. I know it's really weird. So you have to look at each of them. So
I'm not absolutely certain. I have never seen it occur.
I don't doubt that. I just know. So that would have to be.
But very topography wise, where does the island stop perking?
Well,
Oh, going south.
I can say that very easily.
You're probably right.
Right about there?
Yeah. Probably right here.
Yeah.
That's where, and where does it stop being water? Because I know that the south end has a hard time finding water.
Yeah,
and that's why it's all piped. But
right, so that's why there's wells like the Fletcher Bay.
Right, so I'm just curious.
Service. I don't know that it's, yeah, I can explain it simply.
This is clearly the worst
yeah.
part.
Yeah.
And the work that I've saw over the years is that, you know, it's really, there's ample water on the island. It's really a management issue and a pipe and pumping issue of getting around.
Right.
One of the things, by the way, was talked about years ago was for the city to not get into this, but simply get into the wholesale business and sort of put a loop around the island and as a transmission line. Say, okay, now everybody else can hook up, and that's the city's role, to be a wholesaler. Now, whether that makes sense. By the way, on the other hand, you could do, to me, as some of you know, when I found out that that sold without the city buying it, I was floored, because this connection here is about as simple as can be. And the city does not, by the way, when the city acquires a system, you don't have to connect to it. You just acquire and operate.
What's a little puzzling to me and happened with this South Bainbridge water system and so on is, so water, central utility service, you know, central to life, nothing more important than water. You can do without electricity, so on. And yet, the water service that the community had no say, the broader community had no say, and actually the consumers served by the had no say in that transfer. And it's something about that seems not quite right to me. Not that you couldn't have facilitated what happened, but just that there was no say.
It's because it's a private, it's a private company.
Yeah, well,
and nothing prevents PSE, a private company, or Bainbridge Disposal, a private company, to sell to another private company.
So Puget Energy got the electrical utility and bought it from a public entity, right?
On Bainbridge Island?
No. Puget Sound Energy bought out Puget Power.
No.
Puget Power was a public utility, and they sold.
Well, they were publicly traded. PSE was a publicly traded company, and they are no longer publicly traded on the stock market because they were bought by a foreign corporation. Right?
But they were always a private company. They were always regulated by WTC.
But the customers had no say.
But Bainbridge Disposal could be bought by Waste Management tomorrow, and there's nothing anybody could do about it. They're private companies.
Well, but except the franchise in both cases, the franchise for PSE franchise.
Except, depending on size, thank you. I think there may be some requirement that the UTC has to prove it, but I don't know that. I'm not a UTC lawyer. I don't know.
When a city takes over a private or another utility, say a private utility, I suppose there are various circumstances. It could be a going concern or it could be bankrupt. But in all cases, the city has to perform due diligence and determine what assets and liabilities, and they take those all over if they take possession of it. Is that correct?
Yeah, and typically what happens when a utility, whether it's a city or any other, takes over another utility is that the rates are, they sort of phase the rates in together over the years. They don't quickly change rates. And if one of the systems being acquired is deficient, then the acquiring system usually provides the ability to improve the system, and then they have that system pay a surcharge to sort of get it up to snuff, so you end up phasing the improvements in over time, almost always. What is
unusual, and this I don't know the answer to, about the PUD's purchase of South Bainbridge Island. But when the PUD bought North Bainbridge, they floated a bond issue, a bond issue to pay the purchase price, which is $2 million, I think. And the PUD then added a surcharge to the customers' bills for 15 or 20 years to pay the PUD back. So essentially, the customers paid for that purchase.
That's essentially what my mother-in-law got a notice from PUD about the South Bay.
Well, and that's what I don't know.
Rates are going up and there's a surcharge.
Yeah. Well, here's what I don't know, and I got a copy of the letter, and I was going to hand it out, so I'll do that now. And I have asked to find the answer to this, but I have a copy of the letter that the PUD sent out.
So when a PUD decides to float a bond issue, do they have to have that first approved by the customers in a referendum?
No. The Board of Commissioners of the Kitsap Public Utility District, which is three people, they voted and they approved that.
And that is different from what authority city government would have.
Well, city government could do the same thing.
Why are we voting on bond issues?
Because the city council chose to put the police station on the bond issue. They could do it under revenue bond or council money bond. They don't, it's just a choice.
Oh, okay.
Sure. We have got too many piles. So what I'm looking for is the letter from the PUD. The letter from the, let me put my stuff inside. So I don't know the answer to your question about as to whether they are paying that back. I would bet they are, though.
I don't know.
Sorry. In this place. So what the point I'm getting to in answering is if North Bainbridge, the city could negotiate with North Bainbridge to transfer North Bainbridge system to the city. And the city could then operate.
They usually
could have, but now it's PUD.
Yes, but the PUD could do the same thing. It says the PUD couldn't.
Yeah, if they wish to sell it, the question is whether you, we're just discussing whether you can compel KPUD to sell. And I think
yeah, I don't know.
The points that, you know, that interest me that I've already articulated, but is a PUD, if sort of the third most ambitious model, wouldn't mean that you'd go around aggressively acquiring the systems. It would rather be that there would be a statement of over time. What is the role of the city, say, let's say with respect to water, that it would take a lead role but might go for a great deal of time, you know, working with the existing providers. So versus the kind of organic way of.
By the way, just here's one that I don't know the answer to. This is a letter that was distributed to South Bainbridge Water System customers, and it says, you know, we're taking over, here's the rates. But if you go down to the third to last paragraph, under the chart, under the table, it says, in addition to KPD's standard rates, customers of the system will be assessed a monthly capital facility charge of $6.55. This charge, which will remain in place for 15 years, will fund needed improvements to the system. Approximately $2 million in capital upgrades will occur over the next 10 years. I don't know whether that
includes a purchase price.
Includes a purchase price or not. Honestly, in my view, if it includes a purchase price, that's not very
well. The purchase price
statement.
Is $1.5 million, right?
About roughly, I think.
1.4?
Yeah, something
like that.
So I don't know the answer. If they are truly spending $2 million to upgrade the system, I'm not surprised. And I'm also not surprised that there's a surcharge being paid by that community, as I just said, to upgrade their system. That's not unusual. Well, what I don't know is this is
special
silent.
Special assessment, sort
this,
of.
This, yes. This is silent on where the 1.5 is coming from. I don't know the answer to that.
But you suspect it's to reimburse the purchase. The customers themselves are reimbursed KPOT for their cost.
It would be, I would be very surprised if all the other customers of the PUD, which has like 50-some systems in North Kitsap, is going to pay to buy this system. I would find that remarkable. But okay, we're about out of time. I think, what do we want to do next time? Oh, yes, thank you. So, good old Daniel Smith sent out an email to all of us, which included this memo that I hadn't seen for years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you?
Did you?
Yeah. Thank you.
And this memo is different than, it's not exactly on point. But this was a memo, I just think you ought to read it. This was a memo written in 2008 by the previous city administrator, well, actually about three city administrators ago. And what they were asked in 2008, this is before this committee was formed, by the way. They were asked, why are the rates so high? And so they wrote this long memo, essentially justifying why the rates are so high. And the reason I give it to everybody to read is, starting on page 6, they have options to operate these utilities more cheaply. And they include some of the things we just talked about, which is operating in a true business fashion, divesting the city of the utility, taking over the other utilities, and that sort of thing. It's just a point to mention. And I'm sorry, I got one more thing I want to say on all of this governmental morass here, okay? Just to throw into the mix. There is another alternative to operating this utilities on the island that we really haven't discussed. And that is for an RC57 water district and sewer district to operate all the utilities. The city has the power to take in all the water systems in the city and the sewer systems under its umbrella. But so does an RCW57 water sewer district. And the way that would happen is sewer district 7 could annex the entire island, and it then becomes, and when it does so, it has the power of the water and sewer district. It would be the three elected commissioners from there would have the entire island system within their jurisdiction. And then that island-wide, we would then change its name to not Sewer District 7, but Bamertown Utility District, separate government, just like a fire district, school district. It could then, over time, acquire the systems, including the city could transfer its system to the Bamertown Utility District. And you could have, over time, an island-wide utility district independent of the city. So for those people who would like local control but don't like the city, there is a way to do that.
We should have thought bigger.
Well, the downside is we have another island-wide government, like we have a park, fire, school, and city. You have another island-wide government. But you could do that.
There is, look, time. But the public utility board model is the model in Tacoma, where you have a separate public utility. So water, sewer, Tacoma Rail. Correct. They have correct. A rail. They have a railroad.
I recommend five people.
Yes, I agree with that. So let's talk about the overtime. What do we want to do next time, folks? Well, I'm going to bring back the stormwater then.
So much.
Oh yes. Thank you. Electing chair and vice chair, we talked about doing that right away, and then we started having people ask, and I forgot. What's your wisdom? I thought we ought to have all seven of us here when we do this, but what's your wisdom?
We should. Yeah. Okay. But is that, if we're all seven going to be here next
week? No, Jim's not going to be here. next time. So,
well, but next time we're all seven here. Let's let me do it.
Yeah, but that isn't until after you come back in September, because he's gone for 3 weeks.
Well,
I mean, it's not the end of the world.
While I'm gone, I'll.
It's not the end of the world. I mean, I can keep going, but I think we ought to affirm this. What do you want? What's your feeling, folks? Should we just elect next time? But Jim's not here.
That's fine. I'll pass my proxy to somebody.
Yeah. 100% of it or 50% of it?
I mean, I don't think it's going to be a controversial election, but if we have it,
we'll do it next time if you don't mind, we have everybody here. Okay. All right. Thank you, Steve. Next time, meetings. What do we want to talk about? We're going to talk about the stormwater thing. What else do we want to do on this stuff, the comp plan? Do you want to think about it and just come back and talk about this some more? We need to start
drafting the comp plan language, because that also leads to lots of discussion, but it makes it
the framework
more focused.
Yeah. If somebody wants to start writing something, that'd be great before next week. What some policies, general policies ought to be, and then we can begin to apply them to each of these utilities. That would be great. Or if two of us want to get together, that's also possible. But three.
I think it might be useful to have a utility board model discussion, because the city, I mean, I hear a lot of criticism of the city. A lot of it's old news. It's old news. But, maybe at least explore that a little bit. The idea that there'd be one utility board, and people in this room might become members of that board, but it would be have more authority over utility services.
And I can
ultimately.
All right, well, we can talk about that next time. We'll just pick up again on the water utility, if that's all right. Okay.